People go to national parks to get away from the issues of big cities to enjoy spectacular views and closeness to nature. But the big city can follow people to the park, not just because so many people visit the parks, but because pollution levels at times mimic the pollution situation in big cities. And the knowledge of that discourages some people from visiting the parks. These are the findings of new research recently published by faculty members at Iowa State University and Cornell University. The lead author of the study is David Kaiser, assistant professor in the Department of Economics at Iowa State University, who is our guest on The Exchange. David, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me.
So I guess the first thing a lot of people are going to wonder is, why is an economist leading a study of air pollution?
Sure. Well, let me just clarify one thing as well. So I am the first author on the paper, but economics convention is that we typically go alphabetical order. So
this is a
joint effort with Ivan Rudick at Cornell, who's also on the line, I believe, and then Gabe Lade, who's here at Iowa State. But to answer your question about why we're interested in this, so I'm an environmental economist, and environmental economists are often really interested in trying to measure the benefits of certain environmental policies. And one way of doing that is trying to understand how people respond to changes in environmental quality. So we were interested in doing kind of two things with the study. One, trying to understand how air pollution as measured by ozone concentrations have changed in national parks over time, and then also whether or not households or individuals are changing their behavior in response to changes in ozone in these parks.
Now, there is apparently, David, a fair amount of history with air pollution in national parks. Can you run us back just a bit there?
Sure. So the Clean Air Act provides special protections for air quality in national parks through a special designation known as Class 1 areas. And so these areas help or are supposed to help prevent deterioration of air quality in places like national parks to keep them pristine.
But what has been the success rate actually with that? So, I mean, they've been having some issues with pollution in national parks, obviously.
Sure, sure. So what we find in our study is we focus on the time period from 1990 to 2014. And where what we see is that ozone concentrations actually increased from 1990 up through the late 1990s, and then have been steadily kind of decreasing since that time, since the passage of or the introduction of the 1999 regional haze rule at the EPA. And so one of the things that motivated the paper was that there had been a number of popular press articles detailing or kind of highlighting this issue that air quality was not necessarily great in national parks. And so we did the study to try to figure out a little bit more detail in terms of how what air quality looked like as measured by ozone and how it's changed over time.
Ozone is a focus. I know right now we're dealing with a lot of particulate pollution in our region from wildfires, and so the mm-hmm. air quality gets very bad. But we're looking at the PM2.5 listing, the particulate pollution. But there are ozone sensors as well out there. So ozone, obviously, a fairly standard concern. What are the basic issues with ozone? Where does it come from, and what does it cause?
Sure. So one of the reasons why we focused on ozone in national parks is that it was the most widely monitored pollutant in national parks, and it was also monitored over the longest time period. So certainly if we had more data on fine particulates in national parks over time, we would focus on those as well. And we look at that a little bit in our paper. But ozone is essentially what we're worried about ozone because it's a secondary pollutant that's formed by chemical reactions in the atmosphere between VOCs and NOx, as well as sunlight. And so it can be high in these areas, such as national parks, because it can drift over long distances from faraway areas such as cities and other areas with large industrial activity.
I've noticed that with ozone in particular, it does tend to drift long ways. In fact, we just talked to people in Redding, although it was about the wildfire recovery, but the Redding's ozone levels get very high largely because things drift up valley from Sacramento.
Yep, that's correct. And so that's one of the reasons why, although we don't kind of focus on the reasons for high ozone levels in parks in our study, you can kind of infer that one of the reasons why ozone is probably higher in some of these parks is that places like Sequoia or Yosemite, you can get high, ozone or pollution kind of drifting up from from the Central Valley or from cities on the coast, whereas in areas such as Redwood National Park, you know, it's a little bit further away from urban centers. And it's probably one of the reasons why we see ozone levels being actually fairly good in Redwood National Park.
Fairly good in Redwood National Park. Okay. But
that's
all right. So I was going to ask you about the differences between parks, and Redwood, you're saying, is pretty good. What are some of the parks that seem to be the biggest hitters? You say Yosemite is one of them, but you have Yosemite and Sequoia both?
Yeah, so Sequoia certainly is one of the parks with the highest average ozone levels, as well as you can think of these as bad ozone days, in which ozone levels exceed certain levels that are unhealthy for sensitive populations. And so Sequoia actually has ozone levels that are essentially equivalent to L.A. today, whereas I was looking at a list of our parks, I think, for your listeners, and, you know, areas like Redwood National Park has pretty good ozone levels, as well as Pinnacles National Park in California as well.
That's just wild to think of Sequoia as having high ozone levels, being that far from an urban area, and way up. I mean, hard to get to, too. If anybody's been there, they can attest to that. David Kaiser, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's from Iowa State University, from the Department of Economics. He is the first listed author, because they went alphabetical, on a study called Air Pollution and Visitation at U.S. National Parks, published in Science Advances on July 18th with Gabriel Lade and Ivan Rudick. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Are you discouraged by pollution in national parks? Would you not go because you noticed that the ozone levels are running high if you had plans to go, for example? 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, or you can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So Sequoia's level is pretty much the same as Los Angeles, which is so essentially big city issues with the air in places that are far from the big cities. That a fair statement, David?
Yes. Sorry. That's correct. Yeah. And it was that was one of the kind of our surprising findings of the study, is that we really weren't sure what we would find when we started out. You know, we kind of had a hunch based on some of these other popular press articles, as well as the National Park Conservation Association put out a report several years ago kind of detailing potential problems in parks. But we really weren't expecting to find that ozone levels in parks were similar to major metropolitan areas.
Is there any kind of visual component when the ozone levels are high? I mean, it's not like particulate pollution in the same visual sense, I thought. So, I mean, could you know, other than from looking at what the current readings were, what the ozone level was?
So ozone is, high ozone levels are typically correlated with less visibility. And so in some circumstances, you might expect that ozone levels are higher on poor visibility days. But it's not going to be something that, ozone itself is not something that you can see.
All right. So what kind of a trend did you find in visits relative to the ozone levels?
Sure. So one of the things we found was that typically when ozone levels went up by about a percentage point, visitation decreased by about a percentage point. And so we do see that there is a little bit of a very strong statistical relationship between ozone levels and visits. And we hypothesized in the paper a couple potential reasons for this. One might be that, you know, as I just mentioned, high ozone levels are correlated with lower visibility. So visitors might be decreasing their visits because of lower visibility. And another potential reason is that when ozone levels are high, you have certain you're certainly worried about adverse health impacts. And many parks do put out ozone warnings when people are worried about potential adverse health impacts. And so we also hypothesized that this might be one potential mechanism for reducing visits. And we find a little bit more evidence that it's the potentially adverse health impacts. But we are pretty careful in the study to say that this is a strong association, and it's not necessarily causal in nature. And potentially follow-up studies could look to see whether or not these ozone levels are actually causing fewer visitations.
All right, so you got the correlation, but not necessarily the causation.
That's correct. Yep.
And is it pretty consistent? I mean, if you had 5% more ozone, would you have 5% fewer visits, something like that?
That is correct. We do focus on these kind of smaller changes. So a 1% change in ozone, we find about a 1% decrease. it's a little bit harder for us to extrapolate to really large changes in ozone and what that would mean for potentially really large changes in visits. It's harder for us to make that statement.
We've already established that the time period of the study was broad. You went from 1990 to 2014, and did you confine it at all within the year to the summer travel season, for example, or any other place or place on the calendar where people visit national parks more often?
Yeah, that's a great question. So most of the statistics that I've provided so far have been looking essentially over the entire year, but we also do break out to look to see whether or not visitations are responding differentially over time. And we do find actually stronger effects in the summer as well as the fall when ozone levels tend to be higher, but visitations are also higher in those seasons. And so we don't find much of a response in the winter. Ozone levels are pretty good during that time for many of our parks. And visitations tend to be a little bit lower too, but we do find stronger effects kind of over the busier seasons, the summer and fall.
David Kaiser, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, assistant professor in the Department of Economics at Iowa State University. He is the first listed author in a study about air pollution and visitation at U.S. national parks. In fact, that is the title of the study, Air Pollution and Visitation at U.S. National Parks, in which they're noticing a correlation that as the ozone goes up, the visits go down. You can join the conversation in the exchange. Talk about your own recreation stuff, and this is cogent to our time right now. We're not talking about ozone so much as particulate pollution. Are you not making travel plans or ceasing travel plans that you'd already made because of the fact that there's smoke in the place you'd thought of going? 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Were there any places, David, where the correlation seemed to break down, places where perhaps the spending time in the out of doors is not as important as like going into caves in the ground or things like that?
Sure, that's a great question. So for our study, we didn't do this on necessarily a park-by-park basis, so it's a bit harder for us to establish that relationship on a park-by-park basis, but essentially this is an average response over all parks in our study, which is essentially 33 national parks that span a broad coverage across the United States. So I think for your listeners, certainly parks like Redwood National Park, Yosemite National Park were in the sample, but we also look at Acadia and Great Smoky Mountains as well.
Yeah, Crater Lake is within our listening area, the only national park in Oregon, the only official national park. I guess we start getting into the zone, and I've asked the listeners to join us on this point. Well, the smoke, the idea that particulate pollution is perhaps a correlative. Was it just that particulate figures, PM2.5, not available for all the years you were looking at?
So it wasn't available for all the years or as broadly monitored at parks. And so we do run a few different kind of sensitivity analyses where we include particulate matter where we have it. And it doesn't really change our ozone findings so much. But it just wasn't something that we could include in our study over kind of the same broad coverage as we have for ozone across the U.S.
Because I know that, for example, we've got parts of Yosemite closed right now because of the need to get firefighting equipment in and to keep people away from the smoke from the Ferguson fire. So smoke, particulate pollution becoming a bigger issue as time goes on. I wonder, just for the purposes of your own research, I mean, when you've done a study like this, if you go one of two ways, do you either like look at the news to see if what you've done in research is being confirmed, or do you try not to because you want to make sure you get the data through the official pathways?
Sure, that's a great question. I mean, I think just out of curiosity, I do see I see some of these things happening in the news. I encourage my own graduate students and students here at Iowa State to read the news daily. Because I think in a lot of ways it helps us better understand like the important issues, real world issues to work on in our own research. So it's kind of hard to not watch it and to not follow it. But we certainly try not to let it influence you ahead of time as to what you might expect to find.
So David, were there any surprises in the research? I mean, especially given a steady improvement that we're supposed to be seeing in the amount of pollutants put out by vehicles. I mean, ozone comes primarily from car exhaust, doesn't it?
So car exhaust is certainly a source for contributing to ozone levels. We do try to control for that in our study by using what economists and statisticians often refer to as an instrumental variable strategy. But what it boils down to is that our statistical approach and certain specifications, we do try to control for the fact that visits, these ozone levels might be higher when more people are visiting because of traffic. And when we do control for that, we actually find stronger impacts of or stronger relationship between ozone correlations and or higher ozone correlations and negative visitation. So it was certainly something that we worried about going into this study. But when we do control for that, it seems to be something that still kind of reinforces our findings.
So nothing in there that blew you away, that made you go, whoa, we didn't expect to see this?
I think the biggest thing that was kind of jointly surprising was just the fact that, in 1990, ozone levels in major metropolitan areas were, significantly higher than they were in parks. But just to see the fact that ozone levels increased over the earlier part in the 1990s in national parks as they were decreasing in cities was surprising. And then to see that these levels have essentially been statistically indistinguishable since the late 1990s was certainly, I think, surprising to all of us. And although there has been prior research documenting the fact that ozone levels can be higher in rural areas, we were just surprised to see that these levels were still fairly high in national parks. And the reason why this is important from a public health perspective is that we still see about 2.5 to 3 weeks on average where ozone levels are at unhealthy levels in national parks. And just given the sheer volume of visitors to national parks, this is an important, potentially important public health issue.
This is observation, though, and not recommendation. I mean, there are obviously some pollution controls in the parks already. Are there any logical next steps you see?
So in terms of our own analysis, one of the things that I think would be interesting to do is to try to understand the potential economic benefits of decreases in ozone in these national parks. And so that might be to look at the potential kind of dollar amounts of these health exposures, as well as trying to better understand, the lost value to individuals from not going to parks with high ozone level.
All right. So ozone levels in the parks as high as cities in some cases. That's a real mind blower. Sequoia having levels as high as Los Angeles. But that's what the data show from David Kaiser, Gabriel Lade, and Ivan Rudick in their study, Air Pollution and Visitation at U.S. National Parks in Science Advances, July 18th. David Kaiser at Iowa State University, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me.